Welcome to Diary of a Tax Practice Owner, the show where we say goodbye to burnout and hello to freedom through automation. We're Jamie and Jessica, and in each episode, we'll explore how you can transform your tax or accounting practice, giving you the freedom you desire as an entrepreneur. We'll share stories and lessons from industry pros who have successfully transitioned from being skill-based producers to thriving business owners. Get ready to be inspired, motivated, and equipped with the tools to build a business you love. Let's dive in. Welcome back to today's edition of Diary of a Tax Practice Owner. Today, we have a very special guest, John Shealy, who is a mentor to both Jessica and I. And we're so excited to bring you John's story about his journey through owning a tax practice and now being a tax educator. And I want to share with you before we kick off a little bit about John's background. John is an enrolled agent and a seasoned tax professional that is based in Chester, New York, and he boasts over 30 years of experience in the industry. He began his career in 1987 and passed the IRS special enrollment exam in 1995. His diverse background, owning multi-unit franchises of a national tax firm for 13 years and working as a tax manager at a regional CPA firm for over 5 years. In 2013, he co-founded Tax Practice Pro, Inc., a leading provider of IRS and NASMA-approved continuing education for tax professionals through an innovative subscription-based model. Tax Practice Pro also offers tax practitioner programs, including enrolled agent test preparation, practitioner mentoring, and practitioner coaching programs. John is a speaker, and his current interests include tax preparation, tax practice management, and unraveling the complexities of the S corporation and taxation for non-resident aliens and expatriates. I wanted to also call out that recently, John was awarded the IRS and Tax Assistance Center Pro Bono Service Award for 2024 for his work that he has done in the broadcasting programs by Frank Agostino and the IRS Communication and Liaison Office. So, John, I just wanted to say kind of altogether, you are giving back to this industry, and we love that and would love to hear a little bit as we kick off today about your journey and how you got here to this amazing opportunity to give back to the industry that served you for so long.
Like most self-employed tax people, you know, I'm a hardcore unemployable. I couldn't work for anybody else, right? So I'm up here.
I see you.
But wait, you know what? So to be fair, my mother's an enrolled agent. She's retired now, right? Well, she sells real estate full-time, right? She's retired from being an enrolled agent. She sells real estate. So when I was a kid, my mom owned block offices. So in 1987, I took the H&R Block tax quiz. Back in the day when it was 11 weeks, twice a week with homework, pen and paper. 1987, there's Al Gore hadn't invented the internet yet. So there isn't even AOL dial-up yet, although we had CompuServe accounts, I think, by then, but with 300 baud dial-up modems. But that's where I learned how to do tax returns. My mother owned an office. I took the quiz. Then that led to part-time employment while I was in high school, while I was in college. And then about a year after I was out of college, that led to an opportunity to buy a franchise. And that's what I was doing in my 20s. So, you know, this is all I have ever done. This is pretty much all I've ever done. 13 months selling property casualty insurance that when I got out of college. That's it. This is it. Yeah. So that's how you get here, right? End of podcast, our sponsors are. But I mean, there's a lot of people in our industry. If you look at folks out there that are second and third generation tax people, even if their parents were doing this as a part-time, what we would call today a side gig, right? I know plenty of people that were teachers by day, worked at block or on their own doing returns at night and weekends during busy season, right? It's extra money. It's you know, however you want to look at it. And that led to a lot of people to a second career, to a business. And I think that journey is different today. There's plenty of people that still take this journey, but I think there's plenty of other people that are getting here a different way. But that's how I got here.
Yeah. Interesting. So you have a multiple franchise locations now. Not now. Okay. So those are gone.
Back when you were in junior high, I think I had sold the birdie. Long story short, I started with one. In a couple of years, I actually had five and running like a lunatic. And it's all good, right? We don't have technology where it is today, right? We're computerized and we're printing. Laser printers are expensive. In some cases, you're doing it remotely. Still have a car running at least once a day between every office to do a courier pickup, right? So again, a different world. 2003, so I'm 13 seasons in, Block Corporate operated 35 offices surrounding me. So I was National Franchisee of the Year in 2002. And somebody looked at where I was in a map and they realized that if you look at two intersecting interstates near where you live now, 87, right? Mm-hmm. Down to 84, which bisects New York from Pennsylvania to Connecticut.
Yeah.
They're traveling from Poughkeepsie to serve as offices that are past mine. So it really make a lot of sense for us to own your locations. Can we make you an offer? And they made an offer. And it's an all-cash offer, right? 99% at closing, right? With 1% withheld for penalty and interest in case they have to pay it. So 35 years old, and I said, I don't know what I'm going to do with the rest of my life, but I took it. I had nothing to do. So the Block offices are gone, but at one point, three year-round employees, but peak of the season, 50 people. And the challenges then are probably similar to what people with seasonal employees see, is I need the right number of people that can work the right hours with the right skill set in the right location. And it was always like 80% right. And the balance, there was always that, I won't use the word problem, there was always that challenge. My goodness, who's going to work Wednesdays in Liberty? Who's going to work, Sundays in Montgomery, right? It's a franchise. Yeah. You can't unilaterally say, we won't be open on Sundays in that location, or we'll close at 5, because that's right. When it has to leave another location. You just got to follow your contract out. But that's done. And I don't know what it would be like to be in that environment today, because those are some serious challenges, getting people to come into the office and work specified hours, things. But no, so you were going to go someplace before I said no.
Yeah, no, I was just curious. So when you sold off the firms, what did you end up doing after that? Like, did you start up another practice? Did you
I had a new baby.
That's perfect. So you were a new parent. No, that's a full-time job or more.
I had a 9-month-old at the time, right? So and also to feel old, she's a college senior in a couple of weeks. So
congratulations. That's exciting.
Exciting.
I know, one tuition bill away from being done. when you cash out of anything, I guess, there's a little less pressure to immediately save and to worry about retirement, and you can think a little bit. Now, had this been a planned sale, maybe I would have been more ready to figure out what I was going to do. I tried for a year to do something on my own. But I hadn't made a plan. I didn't have guidance. That's always the issue, right?
Right.
Today, what's neat is, the internet, social media, you find people that can help you, even if it's a networking group near you, right? That's in person, you can find your people, quote unquote. Yeah. So didn't have that then. Tried a couple of different models. The big thing I had tried was a guy named Casey Truby. He's out there now that he's a ghostwriter, writes books for folks. For accountants. But Casey had this concept called Bridge 21. And the idea at the time was that they filled a room, you paid them a monthly fee for a territory. They filled a room for you with people that wanted to learn about QuickBooks. Most of their questions were actually accounting questions. And it served as a funnel to bring accounting, bookkeeping and accounting clients into a business. And it kind of worked, but he disappeared from doing that. So, that changed, and I decided maybe I should try getting a job somewhere. So I had a 5-year non-compete agreement. So I couldn't, I had to travel, and I went to work for a small CPA firm that was merging into Wiser. You might recognize Wiser. They were President Trump's accounting firm. And they were, and until 2 years ago when they resigned over a conflict of interest. But they've now merged with someone else. But that was an interesting experience because I'd never worked in, this is an entity with 90 partners and 600 professional employees. So all of a sudden,
different game.
Well, it was neat because you could network with, I need somebody that understands this part of technology to show us something. We need somebody that understands this particular industry. They had somebody. It was a very interesting experience. A lot of bright people and a great experience. But almost 5 years to the day, I was done. And then I started what we're doing now. And the tax practice that we have now is primarily focused on international taxation, which was also an accident. But it's a neat niche to have,
yeah.
With its own sets of challenges.
So when you say it was an accident, how did you fall into that?
I wasn't paying attention.
Did you hire the wrong client or onboard the wrong client?
So, all right, go dial back to the Block days. Block was, again, this is really pre-internet 2003, right? There's dial-up. There's everybody and their brother is getting AOL CDs in the mail and other companies like that, right?
Yeah.
And everyone is trying to figure out how to make money on the internet. Like, it's like AI right now, right? Yeah. The cure of thing is coming. We just don't know what it is, right? Yeah. Everybody's trying. So Block was beta testing a couple of things. They called it click and mortar as a play on a brick and mortar. And they had three things going on. One was basically an online do your return. Another was a online have you check my return for me. And the third one was ask a tax advisor for $20. You could ask a question. And all of these things were using basically dial up VoIP. VoIP, it called your office and the computer said, we have an ATA call as a tax advisor client, is someone available to take the call and, you know, connect you. And it was an interesting way. What was neat is that became a funnel too. Some of these people said, can you just do this one? Why? Yes, we can. So the other two tools, what was neat with the self-prepared option had something I used to call I give up. And I give up was, I don't want to do this myself, send it to an office. So the first couple of weeks, first weekend, we got like 30 10-40 NR and 1040s with 2555 with foreign earned income exclusion cases. Mm-hmm. And I said, it must be our proximity to New York City. We're about 60 miles
away.
Right. I said, it just must be. So the two people I had doing these returns, you know, nice thing about a franchise is they have a lot of the heavy lifting done. You just have to do the delivery of it. So there's a class on international tax. There's a class on all of this stuff. So I pulled down the material. I read it and said, let's go. Ran them through the training. And we got through that first season. I am sure some of those returns are wrong. But we got through it. And the bulk of what we saw through I give up and review my return were these non-resident alien and 2555 returns. So at that point, I've got a really solid foundation. And here's where we get to the I wasn't paying attention part. So I was up in my smallest office like April 10th or 11th, right? Because there's some sort of crisis going on. And somebody I knew from Buffalo tracked me down, not Mark Dombrowski, but somebody who worked for a large Block group up there. And I didn't know this. They were testing it as well. And they said, you know, so-and-so says you're running the test. I said, oh, I am. And she asked me a couple of questions like about employee compensation, because employee compensation was, of course, contractual. They got a set. Basically, it's draw versus commission, right? Where they can get up to 30% of the fees. So we talked through what we were doing, what they were doing, some of the problems. And I said, hey, can I ask you one thing? Sure. I said, what are you doing with all these? You know, they're on the Canadian border. I said, what are you doing with all these foreign returns, right? It was a nightmare. And she said, oh, we turned that off. I said, what? So wasn't paying attention, because I must not have read all the instructions or paid attention in a training. There were two radio buttons, right? You could slide and turn it off. They wouldn't send you those returns.
So you inadvertently signed yourself up to become the master of that.
Well, so then I put down, when I worked at Wiser, I had put down, actually at the small firm first, I put down that, you know, I have some international experience, emphasis on some, and maybe I'm underselling, right? Because I'm imagining these guys have problems that I've never even dreamed of, right?
Right.
So when I'm there early on, I'm a reviewer, right? So I'm reviewing a return. And the short version was that this fellow had come, a bunch of guys had come here from France. They were overseeing the integration of a new subsidiary and they had some problems. So they ended up staying here more than 183 days. So that, looking at the 3-year, you're right, the 3-year substantial presence test, they're going to fail. Mm-hmm. So, okay. So the return I'm looking at has been taxed on their worldwide income. Now, maybe some of the things on the worldwide income part were even wrong too. And I said, wait a minute, they've got treaty relief. These guys are shareholders in this publicly held corporation. They've got kids, children, everybody else. Quick read of Article 4, which is the same in almost every treaty. I said, yeah, they're going to qualify for this relief. So I wrote a memo, attached the citations, whatever else, bounced it back and said, you ought to look at this, talk to the partner before we go any further. A couple of days later, I get called into a meeting. Okay. And, you know, this is like, anyway, so I go into this meeting and, you know, partner, manager, partner. I'm like, well, I guess I'm getting canned, right?
So I've been drilling.
And out comes that file. I'm like, all right. Quote, how did you know how to do this? Unquote. Which reminded me of like Jordan Belfort in The Wolf of Wall Street, right? The first time he tells that crap stock and they all look at him like, make the fire.
He's a magic man.
I'm like, I don't know. Is that what you're supposed to do? Is look into the treaty for relief? So anyway, my new job was international stuff, whether I knew it or not, which is fine, right? Because and this, among other things, it holds your research skills too. As long as you know where to go, you go there, you read it, you write, and it was all good stuff. So not paying attention. Yeah. So anyway, so that's how we end up doing international work.
I love that. I love how happy accidents like that occur, right? Like that led you, like obviously you have a natural proclivity to research and digging deeper. I think most tax professionals have that like kind of like hound dog sense, right? Like you have to be willing to go another layer deeper for your clients to really get them the results that they're desiring. Do you think that was natural to you, or do you think that's something that you learned over time?
It's all about not embarrassing yourself. No. No. So you know what happened? Again, go back to the day when we're doing this. And this is something that social media, we used to blame Google for why people can't remember things. I used to remember everybody's phone number. I don't need to. I push Jessica's pic, says Jessica Potato in the phone, and it dials her number. I don't even know what area.
Jessica Potato.
I don't even know what area. Well, I have to separate you from other Jessicas. But this is, and maybe phone numbers don't mean anything anymore, right? So maybe bad example. But just circling back, when we had, let's say 2,500 returns needed to get reviewed every year, right? But at least some sort of tertiary, some sort of minimal look at one thing or another. Everything comes across your desk. The buck stops here. There's no social media to go to. There's an 800 number to call for help with research that either A, you'd wait on hold, B, they'd give you a callback, or C, the person on the phone says, yeah, I've never seen that either, right?
Yeah.
So you learn to look things up yourself. You learn to at least, okay, what tools are here in the office? Again, no internet in the beginning, right? By 2003, we had some internet. Bob, we had internet everywhere, but it was dial up in some cases. But prior to that, what are you going to do? Well, I've got IRS pubs. I've got Block provided you with one research tool. Typically it was RIA, but hopefully somebody put all the newspapers into it because you had to update this thing, right? This into a mail periodically. And you have to be updated. So, and make sure the person to put the right pages in, throughout the right pages, all that good stuff. So you learned to do that level of research. I think we had the master, who makes Master Tax Guide? We had that too, right? The paperback Master Tax Guide. So you would go and go through those things, go through the IRS pub. Maybe we had a copy of all the training classes Block offer. Go look at the appropriate training class. Is there anything in there that helps you? And then get to your point. And if you still don't have an answer, well, you made your educated choice, right? Yeah. So you learn based on the need, right? It's got to get done. You're it. The buck stops here. That was one of the neat things about going to work someplace else, was that there were other smart people, or I don't know, maybe smart isn't a fair word. There were other people doing what we did that you could go and say, what do you think of this, and get an opinion. Maybe somebody had seen it. Maybe they hadn't. Maybe they said, I don't know, but so-and-so knows that, you know, and you piece it together. And again, so today, the ability to find people and network is a good thing, but sometimes social media can be a crutch where you simply hey, anybody ever do this? I already cashed the check for the deposit.
I gotta get- now I need to fix myself. So we were having a little chat in the green room, and I'm curious, we were talking about how sometimes people don't know how to say no when there's money put on the table, right? Like how
the
real thing.
Our people, right? Enrolled agents, tax people, our people. Yeah. Yes. Let's go. Tax people in small businesses, right? All right. If you came from a storefront tax business, which I did, I made a good living for a long time. There is no no.
Right.
Somebody comes in, they get help, right? I mean, as long as I'm looking at fraud or lying or anything, they get help and they go. So we don't know to say no. And I don't like that. I said this in the green room too. I don't like the term, you're not a good fit, right? Because that's not nice. I don't think that's nice. But I don't have experience in your industry.
Right.
You know,
not the best solution for you.
I don't have the time to get this done. We just told somebody there's 80 to 100 hours worth of bookkeeping to get their S corp in order, and because the accounting doesn't match the last 3 years of tax returns, payroll isn't reconciled, negative, just everything you can imagine that you've seen bad is wrong. And I said, we can't even top you until you get to that point. Well, can we pay you to do it? No, you can't, because we don't have 100 hours to get that done between now and September 15th, and not have you calling me starting the day before Labor Day because you're worried about your taxes and calling every day. And of course, they're not happy that we told them no either. But in a broader spectrum, we were talking about colleagues we know, especially that are newer in the industry. Mm-hmm. They also don't want to tell somebody, they don't want to be Dan Rather. They want to deliver bad news. I don't know. Nobody watches the nightly news anymore, right? But you don't want to get paid to deliver bad news. But sometimes there isn't a happy solution where, oh no, you don't owe the IRS or you don't owe that penalty, or they'll forgive this. It's not true. Sometimes the answer is yes, you owe. And then you've got to sell it with maybe there's mitigation, maybe there's a payment plan, maybe there's some other alternative for you. But you've got to start, you got to start with, this is it. And sometimes too, I don't know. I don't do crypto returns. I don't do marijuana returns. But I know someone who does.
Well, it's, I think that one thing people in all industries, but really in ours, given the work that we do, we need to have boundaries where it's okay to say that this is not an area of expertise of mine.
Mm-hmm.
Don't ask me about anything international. Like, someone was trying to explain PFIX to me and my brain exploded. I don't think so.
But bookmark something there for me, Jessica. It's important for you to recognize when you maybe have it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's cool too, to say, I think you have this problem and I can help you. But you have to be able to say that. Boy, we have people that call to want help with a PFIX. You're not going to, I mean, I have a video, you can go watch it. You're not, if you've never done this, you're not going to earn a PFIX in 2 hours and then go to the return profit.
And, correct. And I think this also touches on the point of why growing your professional network and not seeing other people that maybe do the same thing as you do as like competition.
Right.
Because I've had instances where, one instance was I was trying to get an office locally and I went to the landlord. I said, hey, I'm really interested in the office space. Like, I don't need signage. I don't need anything. I'm like, I just need like a closet that I can be in to get work done. And he's like, yeah, no problem. Like, tell me about your business. And of course, I explained to him what I do. And he came back and said, I had to run this by another tenant of mine who does the same work that you do. And she didn't feel comfortable having me there as her competition. And the funny thing about it is I'm like, literally, I'm not her competition. Like, I don't do what she does. She does something completely different from what I do. Like, she does payroll. She does bookkeeping. I don't do any of that. She's very much like brick and mortar in person. And I don't get offended easily, but I was offended. I'm like, I'm not your competition. Like, there's so much business. There's no way that I'm going to be competing with her. And so I wasn't able to get that office space because of the perception this person had as like competition. So
how many clients do you do in Boise?
15 maybe. Like, I have some local people, but it's like such a small percentage of the people that like are available to take work from out here. But what was interesting is that experience led me to another location, and I researched the location first, found out there is another tax practitioner here. And so I had to, you know, tell them like, look, like I'm taking the lease as this business. Like, I'm not here to do, like, I didn't explain that I was going to be doing tax prep because that's not really what this, I just needed a wall, like a space, just walk me in. And I've actually made really good friends with another tax professional. We actually share a wall. And now, like, just like you described, like, she comes in and bounces ideas off of me. I bounce ideas off of her. We're going to do some joint study sessions together. And it's really cool because we're now very collaborative in how we work with, you know, our own individual clients. And I think it's important to not see some other person as like your competition and maybe someone that you should get to know, learn what they know, and, you know, cross refer if necessary. Or like you said, I mean, out of your area, just be comfortable with like, hey, I'm not going to be the right person to make sure this is done accurately.
So I'm on the second floor of this four buildings here, but this is downstairs is retail, right? It's a strip center. And, you know, we have a side entrance and an elevator, and you wouldn't necessarily know we're here if I didn't tell you we were here. So the real estate agent across the hall has 300 agents, and they're the leasing agent for the building. So I get a call from the landlord, and he says, you know, so-and-so from across the hall says to call you. I said, okay, let me ask you a stupid question. Would you care if H&R Block moved into the center? And ironically, it's one of my offices, right, that I used to own one town over, so it's funny. So I said to him, I said, well, are they going? There's a smaller spot over here and one that faces the highway. I said, where are they going? He says, why would that matter? I said, it bothers me that the one facing the highway is still empty. You know, the center should look full. And he kind of laughed. But I said, yeah, I don't care if they come. And he got quiet. He says, can I ask you a stupid question? Why don't you care? I said, because we don't do the same thing, right? And they're gone after April 15th. I said, trust me, it's fine. So I don't care. And that's just it, right? Now, it's interesting if they're going to sign a lease with me here, and so be it. But, it is. There's just so much going on. But that's also general public doesn't understand either.
Right. Yeah. That's an interesting point, is the general public. And I'm curious if you can, between the two of you, can share your perspectives as leaders in the industry and people who are very well-versed. You guys both have spent a lot of time and energy on becoming educated in tax and being able to help not only your client, but also the many people in your networks to think differently about the way that they're working and, you know, interpreting the law and becoming, you know, more educated in it and serving their clients well. When you're looking at that and you're thinking for somebody who is starting a practice or is in that state where they've been so siloed that they feel like they have to be scarce in their mindset, what are some words of advice that either of you guys would give to them to help them broaden? Like, how do they start working on networking? Because tax professionals typically introverted, so the idea of networking with someone in general is just kind of a scary thought. And also, if they have like a scarcity mindset or a mindset that it's not safe for them to network with others without losing business, like, how do they start breaking out of that?
Well, one idea would be join an association, right? There are NATP, NAEA, California, some of these places. You're in Vermont where they don't join anything except the Vermont Tax Preparer Association, I think. Oregon has a couple of groups. So the first thing would be find a group, go to their in-person meeting, right? Yeah. And one of the arguments I've had with some of these groups when I've been on the board of one is that where are the young people? Where are the new people? Well, you know what? I've been to your meetings. You don't treat anybody like a visitor. You know, right. The comparison I made is if you've probably both been in BNI, Jessica's probably been in BNI. Right. What does BNI do when you're the visitor? They have hosts. And they assign you to someone. So you're someone, someone introduces you. We used to call this common courtesy back in the day. Yeah. But I think the art of hosting a party has been lost on people, the art of entertaining. But that's the big thing. So, you know, part of it too is you find a friend, find somebody, and you just go. And eventually you meet people. If that doesn't work for you, you know, let's call it 40-ish. It seems like people under 40 are less concerned about getting CE when they go to these conferences, as much as networking with people and talking about challenges within what they're doing. And if you know Jason Statz, Jason has said this, that he was getting more when he went to a conference talking to the guy across the aisle, similar firm, similar issues as him, mm-hmm. than he was listening to the speaker. And there's a lot to be said there. And there are some groups out there that are doing conferences along those lines. Maybe there's CE, maybe there's not. But it's the idea about getting similar-minded professionals with similar issues together. There's no reason you can't start that yourself. Put it on social media. Put a video on Instagram or wherever you think your people are, and start with, put yourself out there. This is what, mm-hmm. what I do. I'd like to get together and do a group thing. Where are you? Now, mm-hmm. when I'm at an event, like I was at CSEA, Jessica was at CSEA. But the thing, who's going to be there? That's like a subscriber, right? Of what we're doing. And, you know, you get a whole bunch of people that are both at the event and live in the area. We all got together. The mixer was an open bar tab that I paid, but everybody seemed to have a good time. We've done that other places. We're going to do that at the IRS Forum coming up in a couple of weeks in Baltimore. And it's neat because these are people that, okay, what do we have in common? Oh, job in common, right? Or something.
Yeah.
Don't laugh. Oh, and NATP in 21? I don't remember. Same thing, right? We had a mixer. I got 800 people at the thing. I had 70 subscribers there. The old kids, mm-hmm. when we made this, came and everybody had a good time, right?
Yep.
And like, what do we have in common? Well, you find out, gee, we're taking similar education. So maybe we have similar practice, we're similar demographics, and people can put names to faces and talk. And I know people that have become friendlier or work with each other outside of the CE context because they met at a mixer or at mm-hmm. something we did at a CE event. So, and someone else's CE event. So, you know, that's part of it, right? But it's going to start with you, and nobody wants to do that, right? Is Meetup still a thing? Remember Meetup?
I don't know if it is still a thing. It was pretty cool.
Yeah.
Well, we one of the founders went on to form another company that we worked with for a while, so it's kind of cool. But so if Meetup is still out there, you know, it's a fairly safe way to put together a group and meet with people. You do it in a public place, do it in a restaurant. I mean, you can do it at a coffee bar, you can do it at Panera. A lot of Panera Breads have a meeting room you can have. You know, so there's ways to do this low cost or free and give it a start, you know.
I love that.
Thank you.
I mean, I think that's fantastic.
Dino does a free CE event with pizza. I think there's people that come for pizza. Listen, we
adults still love pizza parties. Let's not pretend that we grew out of that.
You're kind of the best combo in the world.
But you would get, but before putting his stuff online, you have standing room only in a room that seats 100.
Yeah.
You know, June, July, and August, people are standing there to listen to CE and have pizza. And Jessica's right. You know, don't kid yourself. There's a reason Chuck E. Cheese sells pizza, right? Because pizza is the great equalizer. You eat with your hands, right? We're all sitting around eating with our hands off that same paper plate, right?
Thank you for explaining that. I think that is definitely, you know, as you know, someone who I tend to lean introverted, it's sometimes just scary. So those are some great advice pieces. And I want to ask you one final question, John. We've covered a lot of things today. Your journey, we talked about, you know, the power of just following the nudges that happen and even those happy accidents that can transform the future of your business and your career. But one of the things that I wanted to ask you specifically with your long experience is, what is one piece of advice you wish you had received when you started your journey towards building your tax practice and getting out there as you're growing?
Okay. Can I do two?
Sure, please.
First one's easy. The first one is, when you do your pricing, don't say, I'm doing the work, I work from home, it's low cost, I can be price competitive. Eventually, you will resent the customers and it will be difficult to bring on employees and still make money. Charge the correct price from day one and you'll know what the correct price is. Do a budget, come up with pricing, and there's tools out there for this. And if people tell you no, that's okay, right? Charge the right price. The second thing, the single biggest mistake I made in my career, I didn't choose a role. What does that mean? So when I owned the first block office, I did 500 some odd returns the first year, right? Which is great. 100 days. I mean, I had staff, right? So we did substantially more than that. But me, John, did 500. Big preparer, big man. I did everything. Second office, we had staffing issues. I'm going down there. Next thing you know, I'm going to two offices and doing more than 500 returns, killing myself. But after that, and again, the staff in both locations, but when I bought the third office, I was going to go in a third direction. I needed to choose. That was the time to choose a role. Was I going to be the guy running the firm, what our friends call themselves CEO and chief operating officer? There's two people, but you call yourself chief operating officer. But but let's not laugh, right? I needed to choose which I was going to do. I should have been running the firm and stop preparing like that, hire more preparers, figure it out, or hire a manager, somebody with retail experience, explain our parameters, let them handle the customers, the scheduling, and all those problems, and I'll go be the big writer. I don't know which would have worked better, but either would have been better than what I did.
Yes.
So at some point in your business, now today's business, we don't have retail locations like, I mean, you might. Most of us don't have retail locations like that. Most of us are building remote organizations that we're scaling using tools like Hackstorm and you know, everything's right. Your accounting software, QuickBooks, your tax software, and your client interaction, right, are all online. So you can scale a lot easier.
Yeah.
You still have that same issue. At some point, you can't be the go-to person. You have to have a team. You have to trust people. And you've got to fill the responsible slots, right? You look at this. You look at the CE provider. People know Nicole, not me.
And
and that's fine. And that's fine, right?
Yeah.
Because I can't screw it up. No, but it's getting done without people looking for you and settling for someone else. You know, it's funny to occasionally get when I say, oh, hi, you know, I'm on the phone. Hi, it's John. What can I do for you? John Shewing? I'm like, oh man. And it's not somebody who's happy, right? That I've never spoken to before. Be quiet. They're used to speaking to other people here. So, but roll that into the business, right? If people are used to that from step one, Tim Ferriss, the 4-hour work week guy.
Yeah.
Have you ever read his book? A lot of us are doing something that I first read about in his book a long time ago, because that book's probably 20 years old now, where his outbound emails, he had a business selling nutrients, supplements, and whatever else on Amazon and other places. So he traveled a lot. Translation, he didn't work because everything was outsourced. So he started, instead of checking email twice a week from some remote location and forwarding things to people, he started saying, look, I'm out of the office. I'll be out for a while when I don't check this email every day. However, if you're looking to send me money, contact Susie at this address. If you're looking to give you money, I'm sorry, contact Jessica at this address. If you want to buy in bulk, contact Jamie at this address. If you need IT help, this Ed. He said his email eventually went down by like 80%. Why?
Nice.
First time people got that, they saved it. Because now I know who to ask for what, and I don't need help. So what I would say to you is, why would you start that way? Why wouldn't you start that way? And the other thought is, role-based email cannot be undervalued, right? Rather than, you know, John ass, you know, make it manager at, make it front desk at, whatever.
Role I did that. Yep.
The name changes. Yep. Doesn't matter.
Yep. Exactly. Yep. Exactly.
I like that. That's a really, really good point, actually. I like that one a lot.
Yeah. Those are both great tips. And I want to thank you, John. Jessica, do you have any last questions for John? We're in our last couple of minutes here. And
No significant questions. Just always glad to have him. Every time we connect over video conference, it's always a lot of fun. I appreciate his little ChatGPT plug there that he's got. He's definitely our tax AI for taxes guru. Like the one who I'm like, how do I do this? Because though I have what I feel is a good grip on automations, when I teeter into AI, I'm like, I don't understand this.
We'll have to have you back, John, to talk specifically about how you're using AI in your practice and how that and how it can be used in practice so that people can be exposed to that, because I know that is a very exciting new opportunity for people. And like Jessica, there's others out there, and myself included, are it's unknown territory or uncharted territory. So it's a little scary. So maybe come back and explain it to us so it's not so scary.
Anytime. This is fun.
Love it. I love it. Well, thank you, John, so much. Thank you, Jessica, for being here. We'll see you all in the next podcast and we'll talk to you then. Cheers.
Thank you for tuning in to Diary of a Tax Practice Owner. We hope today's episode inspired you to take the next step in your entrepreneurial journey. If you enjoyed the show, please subscribe, leave us a 5-star rating. Your feedback helps us reach more listeners just like you. Don't forget to follow us on social media or on our website at workflowsfortaxpros.com for more resources and insights. Until next time, remember, automation equals freedom. And building a business that you love is within your reach. See you soon.